This is super cool. And I've been wanting to do this for a long time, but things are kind of starting to break, if you will, in the world of global football, aka soccer. And there's nobody in Buffalo that knows more about soccer than my good friend Nick Mendola, who joins us on this episode of Bull in the Basement from your, where are you, in your house?
So my office, it's funny. Working for NBC, I needed like a well-lit place. So I am in like the corner of my bedroom. Like there's my bed, but it looks like I'm in like an office with stuff. Like there's a turf buffalo, you know? So yeah, I'm in the corner of my upstairs bedroom.
That is very funny how you mentioned about staging. You know, every podcast or every Zoom interview you ever see on TV, obviously the talking head has something behind them. And it is intentionally staged one way or another. Clearly the basement is staged. Now, my basement is the only reason I'm doing, and you're seeing what you're seeing now on this, is because I can't do it with the other side of, like, I'm sitting at my bar stool facing the bar. If there were a bartender, I'm facing the bartender and the tap and the whole deal, right?
Right.
So, I mean, would I prefer to play the role of the bartender? I guess not, because I want to be the guy that's drinking, right?
Right.
So that's part of the reason why I have the setup I do. But clearly, you know, I'm a collector and I got all this BS in that silly.
Well, so that's what it actually really bothers me, because I'm a collector too. And I'm a big music and sports guy, right? So on the other side of my wife and my bed is my record player. And if we did it over there, but I need this light,
right?
I need this light. So if I was on that side, I could like pick, when I was work in my basement at my old house, cause we moved in August, I would pick a record every day at every show and put it face. So like, oh, today it's Dylan, Blood on the Tracks. And today it's Tribe Called Quest, Midnight Marauders. And I was super like, I would think about that more than I would think about the show. So it's funny you mentioned that, because I need this light. It's pretty important.
Listen, you know, this whole podcasting thing was new to me when I got out of my former career. And so I actually invested the whole like $16 in the light. So just go buy yourself one of those stupid little donut fluorescent lights. Then you can do it wherever you want, because you can't see that. But I have one of those things shining into my eyes right now. I just woke up. I got eye boogers going on now. And this thing is like so killing me, because I just woke up. But yeah, go invest in a $16 fluorescent light. You can do it wherever you want, unless you're just comfortable there and it's good. So Nick is, we're friendly for a lot of reasons. Nick was a radio guy for a very long time, but you are a guy that is versed in a whole bunch of different things. You love your music. You just made reference to it. You love your sports, obviously. You love media. And most importantly, you love, I mean, you're a hockey guy as much as you are a soccer guy. Yeah. Like it's debatable, right? For you, like which sport you love more. I mean, you're more dedicated because it pays your bills to the soccer, but
I might equate it to you know, I grew up and my favorite bands were Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band and Pearl Jam. Like those are my favorite bands by far. But when I got into a band and started finding where our band's flow was, and maybe we were a little bit more like, say, I don't know, Jimmy Eat World or whatever, that became something I loved, because those were the bands I was around and there was the music I was exposed to all the time. But the minute that Pearl Jam came to town, I was like, my buddy Donnie, who owns FC Buffalo with me, and you know him, runs the town ballroom and all that, I would be like, Donnie, how close can we get? Like, dude, can I, or like, you know, Donnie, who's like the best guy you can know in Buffalo if you like music, with all due respect to his partner Artie and you guys in the media, I would always be like, listen, my dad and I, we have this shared bond over the Tragically Hip. He took me to my first concert. It was the Hip. I think I've seen them 11 times, and 8 times were with my dad. So like, it'd be like, Donnie, like, I just want to, like, I know you and I want to get my dad in a good position. So like Donnie being a gem, like we would have taken anywhere in the 100 level, and we've stood like 6 feet from Gord freaking Downey. And so, but anyway, so yeah, that's how I equate it, is hockey for me is my first love. I'm way better at it as a soccer player, and I'm not good at hockey, but I fell in with soccer at a young age, or at a young high school age. And the team at my school was super good. And I was essentially a glorified super sub enforcer for the three forwards ahead of me who were good. And I ran fast. But I discovered that soccer and hockey have so much in common. And if you've played both, if you play soccer at any sort of decent level, which I've gotten close to once in the men's leagues around here, you're going to be as bruised as you're in hockey because you only got this pad here on your shin.
Right.
So I'll stop talking about it. But yeah, I'm a hockey means the world to me because it made me love competition and locker rooms and being a part of a team. But soccer's right there now.
So you mentioned FC Buffalo, and that's a big part of our podcast today is talking about that, the genesis of it, how it came to be, where it is today, where it's going to go in the future. Is there a segue from what it is now to a higher level of soccer, and is there room for it in Western New York? So I want to definitely get to that. I want to talk about, you know, the talk about the new stadium in Orchard Park, and the field's going to be big enough to hold soccer. And that was when Ron Mercuria and some of the other people talked about it, it was something that clearly I feel like there's something in the works, because everyone thinks it's a football stadium, right? To begin with, it's the Bills house, right? Yeah. Yeah. But they made it very clear that's going to be big enough for soccer. So for a football team and an NFL team to mention soccer, you gotta think something's up. And I know there was like, well, the World Cup's going to, what is it, 26, right? When the World Cup would be, and this, that, and the other thing. And so we'll get into that. The U.S. is back in the World Cup, which is great. You mentioned NBC. You do pro soccer talk, so we want to talk about that as well. Very quickly on Pearl Jam, they are easily in my top five all time. I've never had the opportunity to interview Eddie Vedder, which is a huge bummer for me. But I have met him. And you will appreciate tell me if I've told you the story.
Come on. My heart just like lifted for you and sank for myself. Like everybody has their dream golf foursome. And as a Cubs fan, it's me, it's Eddie Vedder, it's Bill Murray, and it's whatever legendary Cub wants to come with us. Like that is my long time. And I've always been fascinated, it's just so cool. You're going to tell me he was great, I'm sure, but what was it like talking to him?
I don't want to tell you the story now.
Tell me. No, I want to hear it. I want to hear it.
This is going to kill you. It's going to be even worse than it's good. You're going to hate my guts.
No, I will love you.
You're going to exit the podcast.
I will love you just as much, if not more.
If you want to know, first of all, my baseball/softball infielder club is Ryne Sandberg. Number one.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
Not that that means anything. and I've been to Wrigley multiple times, and I'm sure you have too, for Cubs games. There's probably, I mean, I'm old school. It sounds like you are too. I mean, between Wrigley and Fenway, it doesn't get any better in baseball, right? So I'm at Wrigley for a 3-game set in 90, I want to say, oh man, I want to say like 93 maybe.
Oh, wow. That's like the time. Yeah. He's still wearing a White Sox hat occasionally I love this band. So I'm going to try not to nerd out, but go ahead.
So I'm at a Cubs game for a weekend for a series. I'm with a buddy of mine. I was still living in Rochester at the time. My buddy, I mean, you pick your friends wisely, they say, or for a particular reason. He was having to be a manager of the Hooters in Rochester. So, anyway, we became great friends. He's a Cincinnati native. So the Reds were playing in Chicago for a weekend series. This is when the Reds had Deion Sanders. So this is a way we can look up whatever the year was.
Yeah.
I'm not 100 on the year, but whatever. It doesn't matter. We're sitting in the bleachers, and it was literally one of the hottest weekends ever in Chicago. These are side stories no one needs to know about, but I think it's interesting because people actually died. Like 70 people died in Chicago because of the heat that weekend. It was insane. So anyway, we're in the bleachers, 3-game set. We're in the bleachers every day. We get there early. We go to Murphy's, we go to Cubby Bear, we go do all the pregame and whatever. And we have good seats. We're probably in the first or second row in the bleachers. Start talking with the usher on day one. Hey, where are you from? What do you do? Yada, yada. Okay, fine. Game's great. Next day we come back, same spot basically, cause it was so good. And we start talking to the usher again. He goes to me, he goes, "Hey, see that guy at the top of the stairs?" I go, "Yeah, the guy with the straw hat on." yeah, I see him. He goes, "That's Eddie Vedder." I'm like, "No way. It's not Eddie Vedder. I mean, I know he's whatever, come to Chicago, blah, blah, blah." It's like, yeah, he comes to a bunch of games. So, like, if you know the old bleachers, obviously the bleachers now have like scoreboards and video boards. It's a lot different than it was in the 90s, right? In the 90s, yeah. It was, you could, there's literally a chain link fence at the top of the bleachers, literally.
Yep.
And that was it. Then you can look down on the street behind where the Budweiser roof was. So he goes, yeah, he's a really nice guy. Go say hi to him. So he's literally up, just him and this other guy leaning up against the chain link fence, watching the game. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like I'm speechless, clearly. Yeah, so I have my ticket, which some people don't even, if you're watching this, don't even know what a ticket is anymore because we don't make them. So I have my ticket, and then I don't know how, maybe I asked the usher if he had a pen or a Sharpie. Like, who carries a pen or a Sharpie unless you really think you're going to get an autograph? And we were in the bleachers where you don't get autographs. So anyway, somehow I got a pen. So I go to the top of the stairs, and as I get closer, I'm like, holy shit, that's Eddie. Oh, my God. This is ridiculous.
And this is, I looked it up. This is 94, 95. So this is like pre-Vitology. Like, he's a superstar at this point.
Yes. Yeah. So I go up to him, and he, you know, he's like our height, not a big guy, very unassuming. And I go, oh my God, I go, I don't even know. I said something to the effect of, Eddie, you like, you're my favorite. can you sign my ticket? Yeah. And he goes, you know, in his way, he's like, you know, I'd like not to start a commotion and draw any attention to myself if you don't mind. It's, you know, I'm like, oh, no problem. No problem. Yeah. So I don't even know. I think I shook his hand, but I'm not entirely sure. There were no selfies back then, so I couldn't even take a selfie. So I'm like, oh, okay. So at least I met him, and I went back down. It was like the thrill of a lifetime. So then we're leaving the game, and I'm literally walking next to him accidentally the whole way out of the bleachers. And did I say a word? Of course not. I did not even know where to start. I'm just like, So anyway, having seen Pearl Jam a gazillion times, I've stood next to Boom on the keyboard, literally on stage at one of the Buffalo shows. I had never met him. That was the only time I had met him. And like I said, it was at a Cubs game, which would have been.
We talked about the setup already, and I want to talk about soccer. Don't get me wrong, but I also know your listenership will love the Pearl Jam stuff more. So if this was my office, I collect too. And I like cards. I'm a goofball about it. And I have very specific standards. So I have here, I don't know. Let's see how, okay. So you can actually kind of see it, right?
Yes.
It's 20 cards. And these are my 20 favorite cards. Like the bottom row is Lionel Messi. And then here's like Khalil Mack and Willie Evans and Brandon Oliver from UB. But the top row, I mean, this is the coup de grace. We got Luscious Luke Easter of the Bisons.
Yeah.
We got Ernie Banks. We got Saku Koivu. And next to Clint Dempsey, it's Eddie has a Topps card of him throwing out a first pitch. So it's like the best of both worlds. So I like to think he would appreciate it being in the same row with Ernie Banks.
Yeah.
And listen, being next to Clint Dempsey, who was playing for Seattle. I don't know if Eddie's gone to, but anyways, yeah. So I've always been fascinated. So one thing you'll never hear, well, rarely hear me talk about, unless, you know, your friends like you and I, and we're out at a bar, is I'm interested in like philosophy and theology and like really getting into the weeds of serious crap. And I just always wanted to talk to him because his lyrics are very thoughtful and very, very, you know, he tells stories. He has got the storyteller songs, right? Yep. But he's also got these songs that are very meta, very layered, very, we're talking not about, you know, he's acknowledging the spirit of the world, but he's also very clearly not a religious person. And I just think he's got to be as interesting a person as there is around. And you look at the friends he's made, like he's best pals with like John Cusack and I think Chris Chelios and the John C. McGinley from Scrubs and Office Space and all that. So like, yeah, I just think he's kind of cultivated an interesting life, and he goes surfing, you know? So anyways, there's a tangent for you.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. No kidding. So we share that in common. The one thing we don't share in common is I am not a lyric guy. I'm a music guy and not a lyric guy.
Oh, really? I'm a huge lyric. I was the singer in a band, and I thought about my lyrics like more than anything. Like I thought about if I use this verb here or this verb, how are people going to react to it? As if like more than 50 people were at our shows. I mean, actually, you wouldn't remember this. But you and I don't remember if it was one we were playing or, so my second cousin is in Snapcase.
Sure.
And my first cousin, was his best friend. So when Jimmy World and Snapcase played Edgefest, I got to stand 2 feet away from Jim Adkins, from Jimmy World, you know, when he was walking on the stage, kind of like you're talking about. But also the year before the year after, my band played the local stage. And that's, so at one of those, I met our friend James for the first time, and who's out in Minneapolis now. And at the other one, I met you. And I don't remember which one, but that would have probably been around the time you were still at the Edge, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's where we met, all places. You wouldn't have remembered because you're meeting 100 people who say they listen to you on the radio. And I know, you know, kind of what that's like. You're not going to remember some 17-year-old snot-faced kid. But that's where we met, so.
Well, no, I remember you because you followed me everywhere I went. And I was like, yes. What are you doing?
I'll say this. I'll make some of your listeners mad. When we played the local show, right? We played the local stage. We played before STEM played, if you remember them. STEM with 2 N's.
Yeah.
And at the time, we found out we were going to be playing at the same time as Saliva. And so we made up these little flyers that said, are you really here to see Saliva? No clear motive on the local stage. And I'm handing these out, and I hand one to the freaking bassist of Saliva. He's watching whatever band is playing. And he was super cool about it. But yeah. I'm 19. I am like, blood drains from my face. And you realize, oh, there are humans in that band. And I'm handing out flyers, you know. I don't even remember what their song was. This is
Click, Click, Boom. Come on, man.
Yes. Amazing. Anyways, so.
So good. Yeah. I'll tell you what, man. That, you know, for anyone, again, watching this that's in Buffalo, from Buffalo, been here a long time, those Edge Fest shows at LaSalle Park.
Amazing.
Were by far the best. I'm sorry. I mean, they were the best. Why they ended, I still don't know. But my God, for the 5, 4, 5, 6 years, whatever it was, that run was, my God, it was incredible.
Our Lady Peace, I saw for sure. I think I went to see Our Lady Peace. I want to say that was an Edge Fest. And you guys put on, like, at the time, even if it wasn't an Edge Fest, I saw a Goldfinger show with Real Big Fish, maybe. I think it was like a snow jam or whatever. And you guys were just kind of on the promotional. I know you weren't throwing it.
Yep.
But like, there was a period of time where the shows that were coming downtown, maybe this makes me old. Like, I guess if I was 60, maybe I'm saying this about when Skid Row came and, oh, it used to be better shows around here. You know, maybe that's a little bit of that, but man, so many great shows like Jimmy World, Snapcase, Our Lady Peace, Goldfinger, Boss Tones. That was, I think, Lenny. I met Lenny at the time. I think he was still maybe your boss.
Yep.
And it used to be the shows would come and, you know, it was the biggest band you could get. And then a bunch of bands you hadn't heard of, which is always fun.
Yep.
But then for a certain period of time, it seems like you guys booked all these bands that were just on the cusp. And I'll say this is another quick music story. I remember I was this girl who was like way out of my league. So I had no idea that she was interested. I think if she even was, like, we were just friends. She was dating my bass player in my band, and they broke up and he left the band and we still hung out. So I'm still pretty convinced she wasn't interested. But so we would just hang out. We were good friends. And we went to see the Foo Fighters. This is why it's topical. Obviously, Taylor Hawkins just passed away.
Yeah.
We went to see the Foo Fighters, and My Morning Jacket and Pete Yorn were opening, and somebody else, Tenacious D, was opening because he was friends with Dave. Jack Black was friends with Dave Grohl. And it was at Arrow Hall, the big airplane hangar in Toronto.
Yep.
And I was going to see everyone else but Foo Fighters. Not that I didn't like them, right? But they blew my mind. And they opened with My Hero, and it's Hawkins on the drum. And it's a little bit like when you see Springsteen and he plays Born in the USA and you realize all of a sudden the drums are really important. And so, you know, bump, 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 and I'm like lifted away. And Foo Fighters, at the time, I wasn't there to see them. I maybe owned a couple of their records, but didn't listen to them a lot. And the first eight songs, I'm realizing I know every word. And my buddy with me, who actually, I think she ended up working at the Edge. Her name was Andrea. Just the coolest person. And she's like into it. And we're just like, I know all of these songs. And so that like kind of hit me this weekend when that was the first thing I thought when Taylor Hawkins passed away is we went to see this show, maybe 2,000 people there in an airplane hangar. And I'm there to see My Morning Jacket and Dave Grohl and Taylor Hawkins and the dude from Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, Chris Shiflett. Just blow my mind. Yeah. And what a cool band.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Chris Shiflett because he prevented my brother from being in the Foo Fighters, believe it or not.
Come on!
Yeah, my
really? Brother,
yes, there was an opening in, I think it was 99, and my brother was one of six people that auditioned for that spot. So we actually...
Holy cow!
Yeah, he actually played, I think he played three or four songs in a rehearsal space in L.A., with the Foo Fighters. And in fact, when the news about Taylor Hawkins came down, you know, he and I chatted very briefly about it. And he said, you know, Taylor Hawkins was the nicest guy he had ever met, like in music at that level, wow. Number one. And number two, so Dave was not big on people doing harmonies with him.
Really?
And so apparently, I can't remember which.
Obviously just at the time, right?
Yeah. So I don't recall like what song he did, or I never asked him, but so apparently he did some harmonies and Taylor Hawkins said your harmonies were like perfect, like that. Yeah. That sounded great. So anyway, his meeting with Taylor Hawkins was very short, but he said really great things about him, and it is absolutely a super sad passing. I'll tell you what, I'm not a huge I watched the Grammys the other night, and because I'm old, there were some people I didn't know. Most I did know, actually. I'm shocked that I did. But there were some people that I didn't know. But I weirdly appreciate Billie Eilish. I know that sounds...
I do too. I think it's...
I just love the fact that she's 20 years old and she has like this incredible love for life and what she does and shows it and isn't afraid to. And I like her style. I like her.
Well, music. That's the thing. Like, she's got this kind of darkness in a sense to her music, but like I saw her host Saturday Night Live, and like to have that personality, and you realize like that can mean any number of things. And,
sure.
But I love that because I was like I like brooding music, but I'm not a brooding person, right? So no, I really appreciate her too. But anyways, go ahead.
Well, and she was wearing a Taylor Hawkins T-shirt at the Grammys, so I was like, that's the best moment of the Grammys. End of story. Period. Yeah. Now, granted, there were a lot of terrific performances at the Grammys, but I love that. Anyway, man, if we've gone a long ways off the planned trajectory for this podcast, but that's okay.
Yeah, I know. Let's talk. Yeah, let's talk about the sports.
Everybody that's ever watched A Bull in the Basement knows this, that I am, and they know me, if they know me at all, they know I am organized chaos. I am like, you do not know what direction you're going in, but it will get to where it needs to get eventually. And that's kind of what we're doing here. So anyway, let's get to FC Buffalo. Okay. Now you were a radio guy for a long time and you were great at it. And all of a sudden this FC Buffalo thing happens kind of out of nowhere. So talk to me a little bit about the genesis of it, why it happened, how it happened. Was it an idea on a bar napkin with somebody else that eventually actually became something? And then obviously where it's come, the evolution of it to 2022, and then what you see going forward. So it's a very loaded question, but basically give me the Wikipedia of FC Buffalo.
Yeah. So super quickly, I had a really good friend, like a super good friend, love him, miss him. He's not dead, but just, you lose contact with people. And, he was the PR guy for a minor league soccer team in Buffalo. And I was the only media member that was going to most press conferences. And this guy who owned the team at the time is an English guy. And I think he thought, if I'm typecasting or if I'm putting a bow on it, I think he thought he was coming to Buffalo and going to be able to go to New York City every weekend to go shopping. You know, he just, the geography messed him up and he was ready to get out of it. And they tried to sell it to a bunch of youth clubs who I imagine would have, in retrospect, would have liked to have bought it. But he couldn't find anybody. And me and my buddy Scotty and a couple other friends, we we paid a stupid little amount of money just so, you know, long story short, this guy wouldn't have to pay a fine or whatever, or just lose it for nothing, I think is a better way of putting it. And so we're 27, 28 years old. And we're like, well, worst case scenario, 10 years from now, we're sitting around having beers saying, remember when we bought that minor league soccer team? But the first year went well. And, you know, we played well. Well, no, I didn't play, but we won games. And the second year, I mean, honestly, the catalyst for our growth is completely fortunate. I mean, we put a lot of hard work into it, but Bob Rich, we saw an article in the paper, and I knew a bunch of the Bisons people, but Bob Rich had and gave it a little money, bought a new scoreboard for a team in England because Mindy, his wife, had had bought him a lordship as kind of like a joke, right? Because they had English, and it was from the town of Bedlington. And we, you know, I wrote my people I knew there an email like, hey, I think this is real cool. You got to shoot your shot. I don't know if Bob really likes soccer or whatever, but we had a meeting and Bob was like, what if I brought them here? Like, what if they came here to play a game? And I said, we would play them. And I'm thinking in my head like, oh, let's bring a team here to beat us by 9, but whatever. Like, how cool would it be? It's our second year. Let's play an English team. And we got, I think it was 3,800 people at the game. And it was like, okay, people will come to this. Now the Riches did an incredible job of marketing this thing, and we were on every station, and like there is maybe no one that I have more respect for than Bob and Mindy Rich. Like, first class all the way. Treated us like you're talking to them, and they built the freaking Bisons, right? And they're treating you like you're the only person in the room. So we just kind of saw at that point, like, look, I don't know that we're going to be able to get 3,800 people more than once every few years, but clearly people will come watch soccer. And we've just kind of built on it. And we're in a really good position. Now I'm glossing over a lot of things. We went to Germany, played, you know, toured Borussia Dortmund, played FC St. Pauli, brought FC St. Pauli here, brought a Mexican team here to play us. We've done a lot of fun stuff, but that's kind of the genesis of it.
And so for people that don't know anything about FC Buffalo, are the players paid? Like, what level, yeah, what level is your team and league compared to everything else in the, you know, the MLS and beyond?
Yeah. So it's the highest level you can play in the United States without getting paid, without being a fully professional team. And there's above us, MLS is obviously the top of the pops, but like, you don't, I think this is what people don't understand anymore. If your goal was MLS, MLS is at the point where there are markets bigger than Buffalo that don't have teams. And most of the teams that are being put in MLS now are either run by like David Beckham, or they've been in another league for a few years and built up big crowds and go from there. So we have a bit of proving to do, which is funny with the stadium story, which you and I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit with the Bills. You gotta kind of prove that you like soccer, right? Before that. But, so we're below that. And then there's the level that is really rising and super interesting is called the USL Championship. You know, I think that below that, the pro leagues before that, below that, for the most part, are really good soccer players, but I don't know that the standard is that much higher that, you know, we're getting the best up and coming players, period, that aren't in an MLS academy. So it's a really high level of soccer. It's a lot of fun. Our fans are freaking incredible and they're loud and I miss them. We're 2 months away from our season. And I started thinking like, I can hear the songs they sing in my head already.
Yeah. And that's cool because that's part of the environment, right? I mean, the environment is a lot of what makes soccer. The fans are a lot of what makes soccer. And I've never been to a Premier League game. I can't tell you the last soccer game I was at, to be honest with you. And I grew up in Rochester where they had the Lancers that had, and I never went to a Lancers game, and I'm bummed about that because the Lancers had high-end players that would play the New York Cosmos with Giorgio Canalia and Franz Beckenbauer and Pele, for God's sake, in Rochester in a little football stadium back in the 70s. And I'm bummed that I never went to any of those games, but clearly then there was, and even when Rochester had its Rhinos, I mean, there was a fever for soccer in Western New York. And of course the Flash, you know, they would draw and they had high end, the highest end, really. I mean, women's soccer players, right? So I guess my question to you is, in when we're talking about the next step for FC Buffalo, you know, it seems like the interest is here that could support a team at the next level or even higher than that.
100%. I mean, I would say 110%, but I went to school for English and that's not a real thing. So I try to stay accurate. This, this town is gonna embrace pro soccer. It's going to happen sooner rather than later. But whenever it does happen, it's, you know, the question is the ceiling. The question is, can you look at some of these games going on, right? Like, Inter Miami, which is Beckham's team, and they're playing LAFC, which is Will Ferrell's team, right? Like, those games, you can, you know, you'll get thousands of people. The question is, in Buffalo, how quickly can you, you know, how quickly can you build the outdoor Bandits? Because what I love about the Bandits, and I used to make this line, the Bandits have been our role models, even without knowing, you know, because I always used to make the joke, and this isn't true, obviously. More people like the Bandits than us, but the Bandits may only have 16,950 fans, but all of them come to every freaking game. And so if you can build that anywhere near that for soccer, it's only going to take off. Because I remember, it might have been my 30th or 31st birthday, I was working at WECK, and we decided to start a what they call in soccer, a supporters group, SG, but we did it for the Sabres. And we're like, we're going to go at an afternoon game. It was for my birthday. We got maybe 20, 25, like either listeners or soccer fans or my, you know, the people who were putting on the show with me. And we got seats in the 100 level right behind the goal. And we tried to sing during the game. And people did not join in. They, you know, because it was something new. And I know the Sabres have actually talked about the supporter culture, but I just remember thinking, because they do that in Europe. Remember when the Sabres went to Europe, you would see all these fans singing because it's in their culture over there. But I think, you know, we start to see it with the Bills. People, I think, have to adapt the way they do their fandom, because before the kickoff at Bills games, the Seven Nation Army, that's soccer chanting. But if you told all those Bills fans you're doing soccer chant, they'd probably stop, you know. But it's so fun. The shout song after goals, you're singing a song together. Like, so bridging music and sport, like it's going to happen in Buffalo, and it's going to be awesome if we can kind of unite the soccer family behind it, because like any other sport, you know, people have pieces of the pie they want to protect. So.
Okay. So, FC Buffalo, by the way, at FC Buffalo on Twitter.
Thank you.
The website is?
FCBuffalo.org.
I knew that. And then All High Stadium still where the games are, correct?
Yes. All High is, bit of breaking news here. At some point in the next few years, if not the next, you know, soon enough, they're going to, I'm really excited about it. They're putting a new turf and refurbishing their stands. It is, like, book yourself a ticket to come see us. It's the coolest place to come see a game, and it's only going to get better, which is the reason I bring up the turf thing. It was Wrigley Field in the natural. I mean, this is a historic building that has a covered roof, so our fans are even louder. It's I don't know. I think it's a gem. And the only thing holding it back is the New York state law that says you can't sell beer within 100 yards of the entrance of a school.
That's right.
So once they either get rid of that law or allow, you know, hey, these guys are playing in the summer, school is definitely not going on. Jimmy's not walking out of his third grade classroom and crushing a sixer behind the FC Buffalo goal with the fans. I mean, it's just the coolest place. Like, drive by it, even if you're not going to a game. It is historic. It's over 125 years old.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get to, I mentioned in the very beginning, obviously the Bills are going to have a new stadium, 2026, World Cup's 2026. So there's a lot of noise about, oh my God, like, we're going to get a World Cup game in Buffalo in 2026. It's going to be at the new stadium, and the stadium's going to have a field that's big enough for soccer. And so it would be kind of weird and almost like a kick in the nuts to Bills fans if the first event at their stadium was a World Cup game, because that, in terms of timing, wouldn't that be about how it would work out, or would it be during, would it be in the fall?
I hate to be a buzzkill, but that's the number one thing that I think, with all due respect to Ron and Mark Poloncarz, because I don't think they meant people to connect these dots at all.
Yeah.
It's not, we're not going to have a World Cup game. You, the bidding process, this is me putting on my NBC hat. Should I turn my hat? It's a Bills hat, I think. Yep.
It is.
No, the we're not going to get a World Cup game because the bidding process has already happened. Like Houston, we do a podcast at NBC. We had a Houston Dynamo representative, DeMarcus Beasley, who's played for Manchester City in the United States men's national team. And DeMarcus, like, you know, I mean, they, if you're a city that's still in the running, you are putting people in the media to try and convince FIFA to pick your market. So, and we've never even had a friendly here, but that's still exciting. Like we're, I think the ideal scenario here, especially, I mean, FC Buffalo has a women's team and seeing how people have embraced it. I mean, we, first of all, our girls are incredible. Like we won our division in our first year, like as a quote unquote expansion team. That's ridiculous. But I actually think what I would love for our area and for the women of our area, but also just for sports fans of our area, I would love for them to give us a trial run. Like here's the US women against Canada in Buffalo, New York. Let's go. So we're going to get a trial run with this stadium whenever that happens. But again, I don't know the Pagulas well enough. I know there's a lot of soccer people in their ranks, but they're going to have to push in order to get soccer. U.S. soccer is not going to be like, hey, we really want to come to Buffalo, right? These venues, these cities are lobbying U.S. soccer for games all the time. So I'll help, by the way. This is me like raising my hand. If you want to bring U.S. versus Brazil to Buffalo, like I will do that work for you and probably for free. So look me up. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you mentioned Beckham, you mentioned Will Ferrell. I don't know. I don't know him well enough. I'm not talking to him on a daily basis. In fact, I've never really had a constructive conversation ever with Josh Allen. But, you know, if Josh Allen, if he likes soccer at all or likes the idea of soccer here, I mean, what an ambassador that guy could be, right?
I mean, well, look, I think I know. So you've got, I mean, Josh would be great. I don't know how he feels about soccer, but I do know that Dawson Knox is a soccer fan. He's got an FC Buffalo jersey in his closet somewhere. Reed Ferguson is a huge soccer fan. He's become a friend of mine. Like that's a fun dude. I mean, going back forever, Marshawn Lynch is a soccer fan. Terrell Troop, if you remember that name, was a huge soccer guy. He's an Aston Villa fan. So there are guys who like the sport. And I mean, the Sabres, when the Sabres catch fire again, I mean, Darlene's a soccer fan. Gergensen's is a soccer fan. Thomas Vanek was a Man United fan. The late Steve Monitor, who's one of my favorite guys to talk to, was a Glasgow Rangers fan. Like, I mean, that they're the athletes love athletes. So that's the other thing. Like when we build this, when we get a professional team here, they're going to mingle with the who's who, and it's going to happen. I mean, how many times have you seen a Bills player who you don't know if they, who was it a few years ago that started going to Bills games or Sabres games, Bills fan, and sitting in the, was it a wide receiver? I can't remember, but he would sit in the suites and they would shoot to him and maybe he'd be there with Rex Ryan or whatever. But like, yeah, the athletes kind of suck together around here. So Josh Allen, I mean, next person I'm calling out here, give me a buzz. Let's talk soccer. But yeah, you mentioned the superstars, right? So Will Ferrell, LAFC, the women's team in LA is owned by Natalie Portman now. I mean, Washington has, they're all over the place. This is, it's my prediction. Football is not going anywhere. Baseball is a legacy sport, but soccer and basketball will 50 years from now, are the two sports I guarantee are going to be big in the United States.
I think basketball is already big in the United States.
Well, yeah, but I mean like the ones with staying power besides the NFL.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's get to actual, like, soccer, because this is another thing that you do.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
NBC Pro Soccer Talk. So the U.S. made the World Cup. Was that predictable for you, or was it shocking?
They should always make the World Cup.
You would
think. I don't mean to rain. Yeah. I don't mean to rain on our parade, but we have you know, it's us, Mexico, and Canada in terms of resources, population, and money. I mean, money is also sometimes resources, infrastructure, all that. If we miss the World Cup, we have made a horrific error, which is why it was so shocking last time. Now, in theory, because of MLS's growth, all these other nations that are near to us, you know, your Jamaicas, your Costa Ricas, their players will end up coming to this rich league and getting better. But we should always make the World Cup. And the metric for me has moved. The players we have at, you know, back when, you know, we, you and I were talking on the radio, players they have at Chelsea and Juventus and these big clubs, I'm not settling for them being third in their region anymore. It's got to be between them and Mexico until it's to the point where we're the only one people shooting it. I want to be a, our region's called CONCACAF, North Central America, NCA. I want us to be, there's no reason we shouldn't be the juggernaut of our region. I mean, just, I hate saying it because I don't want to sound conceited about it. I think we do a, as a nation, we don't do a great job with how we distribute our wealth, but we do have the wealth here, and that wealth dictates a lot of success.
So I know I've asked this before, and I don't remember the answer, unfortunately, but it's an important, I think, even a question that a lot of people ask all the time that, that are even fringe soccer fans like myself. Why has the women the women's national program been so good and the men's been, I don't know if mediocre is a fair word, but.
So we get to, Rich, we get to kind of pat ourselves on the back here. It's because we've been a more progressive culture, especially when it comes to women's athletics. We have supported women's sports, and soccer was one, soccer and basketball, right? Like, when's the last time you can remember the women's basketball team getting run out of a gym? So, you know, fortunately, unfortunately, whatever you want to say, we've been early adopters. And honestly, I think our women's national team will always be good. But England, Spain, France, the Netherlands, they are increasing the amount of money they invest in women's sports now. And so it's going to become harder and harder for women to win the World Cup. The last World Cup they win is the most impressive one for me because that was the best challenge they got. And I think the U.S. have missed out on a gold medal at this Olympics, and they missed out on a medal at all at the Olympics before. And it's showing where we're at. But we were early adopters. We invested in the sport. I mean, Buffalo, holy cow, the talent in girls soccer we have here. And frankly, like we've seen, the University of Buffalo, who I love, you know, it's my alma mater, but they cut men's soccer because you're seeing less men's soccer at the D1 level. There are women's soccer teams at every D1 school. And so Title IX also does, you can, you know, have grievances with it if for some reason you do, but it's the reason that we're so good at basketball and soccer.
That's very interesting. Yeah, yeah, that makes a ton of sense. Where does the MLS? I mean, is the MLS? It seems like it continues to grow and grow and evolve, and it seems like there's expansion teams like all the time. Yeah. Does the MLS will probably never? I shouldn't say never, does it ever get to anywhere close, or even is it close to anything in Europe right now?
I don't want to put a timeline on it. It's going to get close. This is what I want to say. This is some MLS super fans take this the wrong way. What MLS has done in less than 30 years of being a league is bleeping incredible. It has grown at a rate that shows you it's going to get to the level of being the best Western Hemisphere, or not Western, I don't know where the Western Hemisphere started because some of Europe is in there, but west of the Atlantic Ocean, right? It is going to be the best league in North and Central America. You know, it's got to catch Mexico and Brazil and Argentina for sure. But, and if it doesn't catch it, it's going to be because the USL Championship caught it. Like, the United States is growing at an incredible rate. And I think that the problem that soccer is going to face at the MLS level for a long time is we're, as an American sports culture, and this is my job, like one of the, I consider this, and I'm sure all other soccer people in this area, if you run a team, you think of it, our job is to counter this. We are, if tomorrow every player in the NBA that was a top 100, if the top 100 players in the NBA decided they were all the money and they're going to play in Greece next year, people would stop paying attention to the NBA. Because people in America want the best instead of just supporting the growth of what's going on there, right? So that is the only thing that's going to hold it back is, I think in the markets that have MLS and the USL Championship, there is genuine, deep passion for filling their stadiums. Atlanta United, I mean, that's, again, I bring up Reed Ferguson again because he's a season ticket holder for the Bills. I mean, this is an NFL player who is, you know, looking at Atlanta United like, you know, like that means it's in his guts. So I think if we can get the average soccer fan to embrace MLS and the MLS snobs to realize that it's okay to say they're not there yet. I mean, sky's the limit before we die. Well, assuming we don't die like tomorrow, Rich.
Yeah.
Before we die, it'll be a big.
I was going to say, well, I think you're done with your thought, but like, is it, are guys playing in Europe for money or prestige or both? And if the money was here in the States, do you think they could attract guys from the Dortmunds and the Premier League teams and play here in the MLS? Because think about it. Some of those guys would dominate here, probably. I'm assuming some of them that come from Europe. But if the money were
a lot of them.
Yeah.
So the issue here is prestige.
Okay.
In some cases, there are players, and you got to pick the right ones, who will come here for the money and enjoy dominating, right? And enjoy being a part of that. And as more and more of those players come over here, it'll be harder for them to dominate. But at the same time, if we want U.S. soccer to be better, we need to have our young guys, you know, getting so it's, you know, rising tide, raising all the ships. But, you know, the UEFA Champions League, right? Like you can't win a European Champions League playing for an American team.
That's right.
And also look at the English national team, who is incredible right now. They're as strong as they've been in a long time. That entire roster, I mean, almost their entire roster plays in England. And so if your family wants you there and the money's there and the prestige is there and the national pride is there, and it's your best chance to get into the English national team. But we will continue to see, maybe when you're 19, 20, 21, and you're not starting yet, maybe you come here and then go back to England. And that's what the money can do. So I'm being oversimplifying. And, you know, I hope that's, you know, it's a case by case basis situation. But when we get an American player going overseas to play at Borussia Dortmund or Juventus or Chelsea, the practicing against the best players in the world, they need the game experience. Don't get me wrong, but they're getting a hell of a lot better just going toe to toe with these guys every day in practice, trying to get a spot on the field.
Yeah. I've not, like I said, man, it is.
Go to a game over there.
Yeah.
I know you like to travel.
Just go to any game.
Any game, the home team or the away team will become your favorite team because you will hear the songs like you in it will get into your blood. And I know how you like sports. You like sports the way I do. Go to any European city, go to a game, and whoever you see, one of those teams will become your favorite team.
I have grown to love largely in part because of gambling.
Yeah.
Just a very quick story. I think it was the 16 World Cup, and a buddy of mine's got a cottage on Lake Erie, and there was about, I don't know, 12 of us down there, and it happened to be when the World Cup was on. And so we would literally, like, you would take like a minute of the game, and if your minute somebody scored, you won the pot. I mean, that's how pathetic we are in terms of, you know, gamblers and watching a sport that we know nothing about. But having to watch it because I had money on the line made me actually enjoy the game a whole lot more, which sounds crazy, but it worked. So yeah. I will sit in the past. I despise soccer, not enough scoring, they just run around and kick a ball there. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that was me. I was that guy for a long time. And then I just became an adult and started being smart about it. And watched it. And now I really appreciate it. And they're really exciting games, regardless of the, you know, I can turn on a game between, like you said, you know, Mexico and Costa Rica, or, you know, just random countries that aren't in you know, that aren't a Premier League or a, you know, a Euro team or whatever. And I can watch it and actually enjoy it now, which is cool. I like
well, and Rich, I think, you know, one of the things you're going to see is gambling is only going to help. And it's only going to help. First of all, let's just say, like, I think we all agree there are people who can't handle it. And so there's a reason that there are warnings affixed to it and all that. Like, you have to have, and I'm not being socially conscious guy. I'm just being honest. You know, like, there are people who I'm careful, you know, like, because I don't have a lot of expendable income. I run a minor league soccer team. But gambling, I think, is going to come to be right up there with alcohol in the sort of reasons / vices that sports grow. Because especially in soccer, you if you've bet on soccer, and I have overseas, I've never bet in the United States. You know that, like, the spread is sometimes like, all right, it's 1.5 goals over under, or it's rarely this team minus two goals. So every moment is made more intense. Only time I've ever bet on soccer is I went to Newcastle versus Stoke City over in England, and I grabbed a couple beers before the game with these Newcastle fans in the away supporters bar. That's the team I support. This is 10 years ago. And they're like, oh, we're going to go punt. By the way, that's bet. It was hilarious. I'm like, oh, we're going to just go like Brian Mormon, some stuff, you know, like, no, we're going to go make a bet. And so I went and I bet on Michael Owen to score the first goal. And I have never been more invested in a single player in my life. Like, every time he got the ball, like, you know, so yeah, it adds something to it. But again, got to be careful.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so where can people, first of all, FCBuffalo.org, at FCBuffalo on Twitter for your team. How can people find your writing?
Sure. Yeah. Soccer.nbcsports.com. We're also, I would really encourage people, mostly because the other two guys on the show are handsome, but we have a YouTube show we do now at YouTube to NBC Sports. And it's also at soccer.nbcsports.com. It's called PST Extra. Or if you Google NBC Soccer Unfiltered, we talk, we make a lot of jokes. Joe, my boss, is English. But he's married to a Buffalo girl, by the way. And we make a lot of jokes, and he's got a nice accent. And my other co-host, Andy, is a nice accent because he's from Kansas City. And we do a lot of Bills Chiefs banter during football season, which, you know, it's funny. Even he couldn't give me banter after 13 seconds. He was just kind of like, dude, that sucks. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I can't imagine that happening to me. But yeah, so soccer.nbcsports.com and fcbuffalo.org. And any support you can give me or our club, it means a lot to us.
And the kit is always great in terms of FC Buffalo. I mean,
oh, kit, you're hitting on it.
In terms of jersey, they're
always
great.
We got a few new ones coming.
Cool.
We got a few new kits coming, and I think they are special. So
awesome. Awesome. And then the season opener is?
Whoa. Well, we have we got a great sponsor in Batavia Downs, so we're playing a friendly out in Batavia against GCC, and then we're going to the casino, me and my buddy Ryan there, who's their marketing guy. I'm sure you've met him before. But Batavia Downs, so that's April 30th. We have a special thing that we're planning for the next weekend. And then our first men's and women's games are that the May 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th weekend. So fcbuffalo.org/schedule, you'll get everything you need.
There you go. Great catching up with you, man. I mean, we touched on a lot, for sure.
Yeah. Good seeing you, friend. I love this thing you're doing now because I love hearing your voice. I've missed it.
We went way beyond our half hour. But I appreciate you giving your
time. That's your problem, bro.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Thanks for doing it, man. FC Buffalo, everybody, go support local soccer, man, at a really high level. Thanks again, Nick.